Hello and welcome to Impactability, the Nonprofit Leaders Podcast. This is a show that explores the landscape of the nonprofit organization, big and small, offers some incredibly helpful information and resources, and gives nonprofits a place to share ideas and get advice. I'm your host, Josh Hirsch. Our show is sponsored by Sukup Strategic Solutions, offering a wide variety of services to help nonprofits maximize their impact. So let's get into solving the problems that might be plaguing your nonprofit. Thanks for joining us again on Impactability, the Nonprofit Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Hirsch, and today we're joined by Jessica Cecere. Jessica is a former CEO of Nonprofits First. She has over 32 years of nonprofit leadership experience. She's also been a small business shareholder, a consultant, and an active community volunteer. She earned a bachelor's degree from Florida State University and is a Board Source Certified Governance Trainer, along with a Certified True Colors Facilitator. Jessica is an expert in board governance, nonprofit management, leadership, and personal finance, as well as appearing in numerous local and national publications. Jessica was a longtime local television media source in the area of credit and personal finance, as well as serving as a frequent guest host on Clear Channel Radio's WJNO Morning News. Jessica has a long history of community involvement with many community service and nonprofit organizations. She is a graduate and active alumnus of Leadership Florida and Leadership Palm Beach County. Jessica also serves as a volunteer on numerous committees. She has served on 12 plus nonprofit boards and advisory councils from 1992 through 2023. Jessica is currently serving as a board member for the Better Business Bureau of Southeast Florida and the Caribbean, along with Leadership Palm Beach. Jessica is a recipient of the 2022 Women in Leadership Award for the Executive Women of the Palm Beaches Foundation, and a recipient of the 2022 Leadership Palm Beach County President's Award. She actually happens to be a former boss of mine when I worked at Nonprofits First, so that's a little tidbit as well. As you can hear from Jessica's bio, she's an expert in all things nonprofits. Board governance is something that has been really tried and true for her. But today, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite topics and one of hers as well, which is nonprofit collaborations. And nonprofit collaborations can take many forms. As she and I were talking before we got on, it could be something as simple as collaborating together on a grant, or it could be something much more time-sensitive when emergencies happen. So Jessica, thanks for joining us today on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Josh. It's fun to be here with you and work with you again.
Yeah, it is great. Jessica is fortunate that she's seen a lot of change in the nonprofit sector over time. And the way, let's look at even pre-COVID and then during COVID, because from a collaboration standpoint, I think COVID really pushed people's hands to realize that they needed to not live in their silos and work together.
I couldn't agree with you more. And that was something that happened so suddenly for people, right? I mean, at our particular office at Nonprofits First, it was like, okay, everybody go home, bring your phones, bring your computers. We'll see you back here in a couple weeks. Everything will be great. No, that's not how it worked out, right? It's not how it worked out. 6 months went by and I have to say, that was a shock to me. I really thought in my heart of hearts that we would be back here in our office in, you know, a couple weeks, maybe a month or two. So as we saw what was happening in the nonprofit sector, particularly here locally in Palm Beach County, but across the country, was that people were panicked, right? A month went by, 2 months went by, many people paying rent, many organizations, companies, people trying to figure out, how do we make this work when we are literally not going to be back together for months? And so it really created an opportunity in the nonprofit community for people to be able to work together and to figure out, okay, so I run a school. I have to have my school open. What am I going to do about that? How am I going to provide some of these services to my students, to everybody else? How can I work together with another nonprofit organization? How can we make these things happen in our community the way we're used to, with a little bit of a twist on that? So we saw just so many people create partnerships, from information that need to be disseminated or suggestions and partnerships for how to provide services remotely, right? We didn't know how to do that.
I think it created that opportunity, whether we were ready for it or not, to see what our strengths were. And at the same time, to see what our weaknesses were and identify opportunities within the community to work together. Whether we had intended to find organization A and organization B to come together, we now had that situation where we needed to, because we knew that we still had a client base of people that needed to have the education, they needed the meals, they needed their senior services, and finding those opportunities within those segments. The one word you used there was partnership. And I'm curious, when there's a need for a formal partnership and when there's time for just a handshake partnership?
And that's a really good question. I think a lot of that has to do with risk strategies, right? Is there a great risk involved in doing this partnership? Or is this literally an afternoon where we're going to work together to pack backpacks? So we're going to do a food drive, or we're going to prepare food and we're going to give it to people. And those sort of short-term opportunities for volunteering and working together are probably less important to have a formal partnership, as opposed to something where we're going to literally provide services together for a year or 2 years. In that case, a more formal agreement or even perhaps a contract is going to be really important. With all those things, though, if you're touching that vulnerable population, so let's say we're giving meals to children or we're going to be working with them, then you do need to go on and do that formal partnership and do your background checks and do your due diligence so that you can be sure that you have minimal risk in working with various organizations. And everybody's risk is different.
So playing off that some more from like a formal standpoint, you've got MO, Memorandum of Understanding, you have a contract. Are we getting attorneys involved? How do we know at what level we need to be?
But I think, Josh, I think that's a tough question. I think it depends, again, on the organization. I would err on the side of greatest risk, and I would have an attorney review a contract. If I'm going to be working with a nonprofit, perhaps we're going to do revenue sharing, then I think it's really important to lay that out in a contract ahead of time so there's no question as to what's going to happen. So it doesn't have to be, doesn't have to take a year of going back and forth with attorneys, but it does need to be ironclad, solid, and legal.
Because sometimes you don't have a year to go into action. Sometimes you need to provide those services now. You mentioned before we got on air about the Edna Runner after school center. Share with our guests a little bit of what happened there, then all of a sudden how nonprofits come together to work.
So like I mentioned to you, Edna Runner, a very near and dear, important lifetime achiever in our community at the Edna Runner Tutorial Center up in Jupiter, Florida, was retiring and ended up passing away very suddenly. So that created a huge concern and a challenge in their organization, where they had planned this sort of long drawn out retirement and now she's gone. Lots of students, lots of alumni, small children, people that you didn't understand what was happening. What do you mean? We were just with her yesterday. So that partnership that happened that I'm going to explain to you brought in some grief counseling for those little children and for some of their parents and for some of the alumni through another organization in our community called Families First. And so that partnership had to happen immediately. They needed help right now. Like that morning when those children got off the bus, they wanted to have somebody that could speak to them about what had happened and how to deal with it, how to process it, how to move forward with it in terms of grief counseling, mental health counseling. And that literally happened. One person reached out to another in another organization and said, how can we make this happen? How can we make it happen today? So something like that, maybe there will be a formal partnership down the road between those two. I submit to you, I think there will be. But in that immediate situation, they needed some grief counselors, and Families First provides that service, and they provide it to families and children. So what a perfect partnership under pretty negative circumstances. And Josh, I always try to be a silver lining person, even during COVID. I was like, okay, so let's talk about the silver linings. And for some people, there weren't, but there were many that came out of that. So what a silver lining for a pretty terrible situation is maybe a lifetime collaboration between those two organizations.
It's unfortunate that collaboration had to come to fruition because of what happened. However, we saw great services provided by one organization to benefit the constituents from another organization, which is fabulous. And that's a very great example of a reactionary, something that was happening in the moment. How would a nonprofit go about wanting to say, we are an after-school education program and we want to collaborate with another organization that provides meals for students? I'm just making things up. How do nonprofits go about finding potential collaborations?
I think certainly synergies need to be there. For instance, meals provided to schools or to families or places where people are in great need. And one organization is providing this service, another one is providing that service. Could be tutorial, could be mentoring, could be meals, could be food drives, could be toy drives, could be clothing drives, could be shoe drives, could be just about anything. But you need to be able to recognize what it is that you have to offer as an organization. And this is where something we don't really have on our agenda today, but I'm happy to speak about, is networking with fellow nonprofits. So how easy is it, Josh, you know this as well as I do, to get in your little tunnel, come in my office, do my work, and never go outside or meet other nonprofits? And that's where someplace like Nonprofits First comes in, is to say, no, you got to talk to this person. You got to come to this networking event. You've got to come to, we did a nonprofit summit last year in January. And I have to tell you, Josh, about 15 different organizations created partnerships in that, very organic partnerships, right? Nothing formal, nothing that we really planned for ahead of time. But the Jewish Federation and the Albert Jewish Family Service Organization worked with the Drowning Prevention Coalition to provide drowning prevention courses at all of their facilities at Oberstdorf Camp, just from that particular meeting. And just cool stuff comes out of that. But if you stay in your one little nonprofit world, you're not going to meet others. You're not going to get those partnerships. Even if you have to force yourself to do it, you've got to get out and see what else is being offered out there. And how can we work together to further both our missions and create something amazing and brand new that helps the community?
So sometimes you need to step out of your comfort zone, obviously go out and find these opportunities, whether that's getting involved in your local Association of Fundraising Professionals chapter, whether that's if there's your local Chamber of Commerce might have a whole nonprofit division. There might be management support organizations like Nonprofits First in your community. Finding these opportunities for where you can meet other nonprofits so you can get out of your office, and unless you're working at home, and that makes it even more difficult to find those opportunities. So now that especially we are in this post-pandemic world where remote work is commonplace, it's almost more difficult to find those opportunities. So we know that we need to be pushing further along to find these opportunities at the same time knowing what we can offer others. Jessica, do you think that there's a value in putting on your website saying, hey, this is what we offer, and we're looking for like collaboration, something to actively promote that?
I do. I think that's a great suggestion. I think one of the things we're going to be launching here at Nonprofits First in the next probably 30 to 60 days is a sort of a community events calendar, which is new to our website. So it's not our events, it's what else is happening out there in the nonprofit world, which is something I've wanted to do for quite some time and hopefully will come to fruition in the next 30 to 60 days. That's a great opportunity, but then people can also post on their own websites or on Facebook or on LinkedIn or on Instagram or wherever they are social media wise, say, hey, I've got this great idea. I'm looking to do XYZ. Who out there is interested in perhaps partnering with us on this or collaborating with us on this great idea or applying for funding on this great idea, right? Because we know that our partnership with funders, they like to see collaboration. I don't know how else to say it other than to come right out and say it. It's a question that gets asked on grant applications. It's a question that people want to know that you're not just doing everything by yourself, that you are literally connecting with your fellow nonprofits and creating opportunities to work together so that, again, you can reach more people. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. It's a really old saying, but it's true.
No, that's spot on, because funders do want to see that. They want to see that there's not that duplication of services. They want to see that the problem that you're trying to solve, you're not doing alone in a silo, and knowing that there's opportunities for other nonprofits to work together to create those solutions. This is great so far. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, Jessica and I are going to talk about a kind of taboo topic in the nonprofit sector and about mergers. When two nonprofits come together and realize maybe they don't both need to exist and come together as one. Stay tuned and we'll see you in a few minutes. One of the biggest challenges facing nonprofits today is securing grants. Where do I find information on grants? How do I write a grant? How do I submit the grant? And of course, the dreaded midnight deadlines. Hi, I'm Josh Hirsch, and I've been there and done that. At Sukrup Strategic Solutions, we have a team of expert grant writers with years of experience writing hundreds of grants for nonprofits just like yours. Visit our website today at sukrupstrategicsolutions.com and schedule a free consultation about your grant writing needs. That's S-O-U-K-U-P strategicsolutions.com. Let's work together and get the grant that your nonprofit deserves. Welcome back to Impactability, the Nonprofit Leader Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Hirsch, and today we're speaking with Jessica Cecier from Nonprofits First. Coming up in a few minutes on our another edition of Coach's Corner, today we're going to be talking about how do we assess the feasibility of a capital campaign for a nonprofit and whether or not it's the right time for us to consider that. But right now, Jessica and I are going to jump into, like I said, a little taboo topic in nonprofit capital collaboration, which is mergers. And Jessica, I know you probably have some strong feelings on this after such a great career in working in the nonprofit sector. Mm-hmm. Is there a time where we should see nonprofits saying, you know what, I think we should work together in a more formal fashion?
Oh, I definitely do. And I come from a background, not necessarily here at Nonprofits First, where we did over 50 mergers and acquisitions across the country with the organization I worked for. And the name of that was Consumer Credit Counseling Service. There were a lot of them across the country. The opportunity there was mainly for financial and operational reasons. So that's one reason that an organization might come together. Everybody's got a CFO, everybody's got a community outreach person, everybody's got an HR person, everybody's got a marketing person. Sometimes you can combine efforts and reach more people because you'll have a lot of those staff members, but some of those things, which is why it's taboo, you can combine some jobs and create some synergies. And so what we call, which is not always really popular in the nonprofit world, economies of scale. And that might be something that you decide to do because you're creative and innovative. And it might be something you have to do because the financials and the funding in our communities are getting squeezed. And they will continue to get squeezed. Technology will squeeze us a little bit. That the entire economic development of our country and what's happening in the world today has put a little squeeze on people. So it's something you just have to look at and see if there are other organizations, either close by or even far away, that might make sense to do a formal partnership and an eventual merger and acquisition. And in my career, the most times I've seen it have definitely been financially motivated. So that means both are trying to vie for the same dollars. They're providing exactly the same service or really close to it. And the funding in the community is squeezed, right? Maybe your funder speaks to all three organizations and says, look, this is what we've got. Either you guys have to come together and figure this out, or there's going to be less dollars to distribute. So therefore, how can you accomplish the same mission for each organization? It really requires checking egos at the door. And realizing what, and perhaps even your career, but there's always other places and other things to do. If the mission is always at the forefront, then it's really not as difficult as you would think to create those opportunities. It's hard. It's very hard. I've done it. So I know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it is hard because, like you said, you have that founder syndrome potential. Mm-hmm. You have those board members who are very loyal to what they've built, whether you're a year-old organization or you've been around for 50 years. You've established yourself in the community. You see the way you do it, but knowing that you're an after-school program and there's two other after-school programs within your same zip code, and that there's only limited funding from your local community foundation to support an after-school program, maybe there's times where you still operate multiple locations. However, you combine those services. So you combine, you don't have two CFOs, you have that one CFO. There are ways to bring it almost under from an affiliate model into a mm-hmm. single base, but it is difficult because you do have to almost swallow a little bit of pride if you feel like you're being acquired in that perspective. But at your core, what you're doing is you're providing a greater service for more. And that's really what we want as young professionals in the nonprofit sector.
Yes, it's exactly what you want. And it, like I said, it's really one of those things where we see it happen with large companies a lot, as it make people, one buys out another. And usually there is this, what we call a surviving entity. And I know these terms are really particularly palatable for people, but it's just the way it is. And we still have to remember that regardless of whether we're a nonprofit, a not-for-profit, or a for-profit business, we still have to operate as efficiently as we possibly can because we've got a mission or a job to accomplish. And if that requires us to think differently, more globally, more economically efficient, that's what we have to do. It's not, you can't really say I'm more important than the people I serve because I'm not.
No, that's a great point, is that think about your customer, think about your constituent base for what you're helping for your after-school program, for your senior services, for whatever your specific niche within the nonprofit sector, knowing that you aren't the only show in town. There are others who are doing what you're doing, and sometimes they might be doing it better. So finding those collaborative opportunities to work together, finding those potential formal partnerships, or even going to that level of creating a merger, it's not something to be scared about if you look at it from the perspective of your end user. But yes, if you are hesitant, then it's not always necessarily going to work out. Can you give us some examples of when these collaborations have not been as successful as intended?
I really don't have an example of one where I've seen it fall apart. I have seen it succeed much more than I have. But what I will tell you is it's a painful process for people, right? There will be some jobs lost. There always will be. The goal there is not as many as would be lost if one goes out of business, right? There are some situations that I've seen with nonprofit mergers and acquisitions that have happened that where the organization likely would not survive very long were they not to roll into or merge into another organization. It's just one of those things that it's a painful process. So is everything, right? Everything, there's a little bit of pain and hopefully a whole lot of joy at the end of that. Haven't seen too many that have really been unsuccessful and decided, nope, going back to the way things were. I have seen some partnerships where people have done a more formal collaboration and shared staff and done that where it isn't a true merger that does fall apart because it really does need to be something that's a legally new entity or one surviving entity. It always works out better if it's really is a formal process than opposed to just a partnership where it's let's try it out first. Sometimes that try it out first doesn't work as well.
So the key advice here is if you are looking to create a collaborative partnership or even just a handshake partnership, definitely get your internal legal team involved. If you don't have an internal legal team, look to the Legal Aid Society within your community. They're a great resource for nonprofits. And that's another great example of a collaboration where you have attorneys working for a nonprofit that are providing resources for nonprofits themselves.
That is an amazing partnership. Not every community has a Legal Aid Society or what we call in our community the Nonprofit Legal Assistance Project, which is a project out of Legal Aid where nonprofits can really benefit from legal services for anything from mergers and acquisitions to trademarks to HR advice or benefit advice or whatever is changing in the HR laws. We're very lucky here to have that great partnership. And that, again, is a money saver. If I have to go out and hire an attorney for those three things I just mentioned to you, let's say trademark, let's say merger, let's say HR, that's going to cost me like $25,000 a year or more. Whereas I pay one very small price of $3,000 to $5,000 to the Nonprofit Legal Assistance Project. Perfect example of an amazing partnership and a collaboration that benefits everybody.
With that, there's opportunities all around you. Think about what you offer to your community. Think about those holes that you need to help with and see where you can find those networking opportunities to find those people. Jessica, this has been a fabulous conversation. Definitely something that all nonprofits need to know about, whether you are actively looking for a collaboration or a formal partnership, whether you're thinking about down the road, how can you help all others in your community? Jessica, before we leave, is there one last piece of advice you'd like to leave for our listeners today?
My advice would be, in terms of the collaborations piece, try to be as creative as you possibly can in thinking about, okay, so this is how we do things, right? Never, ever get complacent about that. There's always something more interesting, maybe more fun, maybe more economical, but you do have to get outside your comfort zone. So stretch your comfort zone, be creative, think about different people that you've worked with in the community, that the challenges you have as a nonprofit professional, and how somebody else that you've seen in the community may have solved that problem. How might you work together to do that better in the future?
Fabulous advice. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us today on Impactability Nonprofit Leaders Podcast. If someone wants to connect with you online, where can they find you on social media?
It's probably easiest to find me on LinkedIn. Obviously, I have a handle on Facebook. I know you're probably going to put those up, but sure. Find me, Jessica Cecere, at LinkedIn. That's the best place to find me.
Perfect. Wonderful. Thank you for joining us again, Jessica, and we'll see you next time on Impactability Nonprofit Leaders Podcast. It's time for another edition of Coach's Corner. This is where we put our impact coaches to the test. We ask the questions that you sent us to give them. We put them on the spot. They have got 5 minutes to answer it, and these questions are really good, so thank you for sending them in. If you haven't sent one, please by all means send us a question. Doesn't matter what it is. Our address is impactcoaches@impactability.net. Today's question is, how do we assess the feasibility of a capital campaign for your nonprofit? Stanton, you have 5 minutes to answer the question, and your 5 minutes begins now.
Hello, I'm Stanton Catto with Sukup Strategic Solutions, talking to you today about how do we assess the feasibility of a capital campaign for our nonprofit. First, let's talk about board and staff commitment. I would advise you to assess the commitment of the board and staff for the proposed campaign or the case that you're presenting. To automatically assume that these key players are on board might be presumptuous. Make sure you gauge this before getting too deep into the process. And also, explore how the proposal for the campaign aligns with the strategic plans of your organization. If you already have a strategic plan and a process in place, then you're ready to test the waters for a capital campaign. If not, this might be a good time to engage in a strategic planning process. In fact, strategic planning is one of the key and most requested services here at Sukup. Organizational capacity should also be considered. You need to evaluate the staff's ability to support the campaign. Here again, similar to discerning the commitment to the process and the goal, the question becomes whether you have the staff to support the effort. And you'll need funds to set aside to conduct the study, whether you're doing it yourself or with another firm. And that is highly recommended. A nonprofit can expect to raise anywhere between 50 to two-thirds more using a firm. Now, crafting the narrative or the executive summary should also be considered. The executive summary would be the development of a compelling case for the capital campaign, articulate the whys, the rationale, benefits, and impact. Tell the organization's story, its history, achievements, facilities, and who the leaders are. And of course, an estimate of the overall cost of the capital campaign project or projects, and include graphics, renderings, helping to make the case more appealing should be included. You should also stress test the case, all right? And so in that respect, you will refine the case for support, determining the interview pool, the one-on-ones, group, or constituent-based surveys, and you will find the money and identify potential leaders in your study, and then ultimately analyze the pros and cons of the case that's been presented and concerns that may emerge during the course of the study and the interview process. We'll also have to consider the timing and external factors. Assessing the timing of the campaign will be important. You'll need to consider things like the local competition, community sentiment for the organization and the case, the economic conditions, and obviously the findings that come out after the campaign will be a major factor in determining when to launch the campaign. You will also need to have professional guidance and the importance of hiring a competent fundraising council, experts to direct the campaign, and navigating the complexities of a campaign is going to be very important. Again, you'll do much, much better, probably save money, a lot of anxiety with professional counsel to guide you and your leaders and your board, your organization through this process. So in embarking on a nonprofit capital campaign, it's essential to weave a compelling narrative, secure internal commitment, stress test your case, assess organizational capacity, be mindful of timing and the external factors, and seek professional guidance. By meticulously addressing each of these crucial elements, you pave the way for a successful and feasible campaign that aligns with your nonprofit's mission and goals. Thank you again.
Stanton, thank you for joining us on Coach's Corner today and sharing your knowledge and expertise on how do we assess the feasibility of a capital campaign for our nonprofit. Thanks for joining us today. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter at impactability.live. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app. That way you'll get new episodes downloaded as soon as they come out. Also, please give us a review or a rating so that your peers in the nonprofit industry can find us as well. I'm Josh Hirsch. Thanks for listening, and thank you for all you do to make the world a better place through your nonprofit.